The date is July 10th, 1991, and we're watching Point Break. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Bodie to my Johnny Utah.
What's up, bruh? It's Colin Stewart.
Yeah, I figured after how much you said that you appreciated Patrick Stewart back in our Roadhouse episode that you wouldn't...
Patrick Swayze!
I mixed him up with, like, it was half him, half you. Yeah, Patrick Swayze back in our Roadhouse episode. Yeah, you'd appreciate being Bodie.
Yeah, most definitely. I appreciate it.
So this week, we're looking back at July 1991, when the movies in theaters were a couple of our recent subjects, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and The Rocketeer, plus Problem Child 2, Terminator 2, Judgment Day, and of course, our movie for today, Point Break, which earned $83.5 million on a $24 million budget. I'd also like to note that Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey opened the very next week. So back in 1991, you could have done a double header of Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be interesting. I haven't seen Bill and Ted 2 yet. But, you know, I mean, you could probably watch that movie and then watch Point Break and you'd get probably two, you know, very diverse, but also very equal in terms of Keanu Reeves' acting ability by watching these two movies.
Yeah, I'd say you probably could, absolutely.
I mean, I was thinking too, like, with all those movies, like, 1991 was actually a really good year for movies.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people point out 1999 mm-hmm. as being one of the best years in film, but I would say that 1991, well, not quality movies with the likes of Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and, you know, Point Break, even though it is good, but the acting leaves a little bit to be desired.
See, I'm not the only one making slips. I said Patrick Stewart, you said Men in Tights. So,
oh yeah, right. I mean, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves as discussed on a previous episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, not quality cinema, but definitely memorable cinema in 1991 for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've been celebrating a lot of these 30-year-old movies, and it was. It was a great year.
Yeah, and like we said, this is the 30th anniversary of Point Break, so we're celebrating. There's going to be a 30-year storm of spoilers headed at you, so strap on your surfboard if you want to ride the wave of spoilers. But if you don't want to ride the wave of spoilers, please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and just dive on in.
Right on. So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, I do have three. First, we have 27 banks in 3 years. Anything to catch the perfect wave.
Isn't it 30 banks in 3 years?
Well, I think that's by the end of the movie. Like,
oh,
they,
so it started yeah, out.
Yeah, they've already...
When the movie starts, it's at 27.
Yeah, exactly. Second, we have, in California, you can party, have sex, and surf before it's time to go to work.
I mean, that doesn't sound like necessarily like a tagline for Point Break. It seems more like the tagline for the state of California.
Yeah, yeah, that's sponsored by the California Tourism Board.
Yeah, and have it right on the sign: sex, surf, rob banks. There you go. Welcome to California.
I wish our city's motto was the same thing, you know, just sex, surf, and robbing banks.
I mean, maybe we should have suggested that when they were trying to replace City of Champions. I don't know if they have replaced the slogan yet or not, but
no,
that might be one to put forward.
Okay, so finally, our last tagline is Point Break, 100% pure adrenaline.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of sums up the movie, I guess.
I'd say so.
A bit, yeah.
But they may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Tempted to do this in, like, a surfer accent, like, when freshly minted FBI agent Johnny Utah... I can't do the whole thing that way, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, set that aside. Here we go. When freshly minted FBI agent Johnny Utah is teamed with jaded veteran Angelo Pappas, he decides to start at the top of the most wanted list and take down a group of bank robbers known as the ex-presidents. Following Angelo's hunch that the presidents are surfers, Johnny takes to the waves and infiltrates a group of local surfer dudes led by the original Aquaman, Bodhi. As he learns to become one with the ocean, Johnny's love for Rush begins to get in the way of his love for the law. Will Johnny be able to do what is right and bring the Bodhi man in? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Right on. Yeah, I know this is one of those movies, we've had a few of them on our show, where I've seen it a couple times. I wouldn't say that I've ever been obsessed with this movie or anything, but I remember that I always liked it. But I realized on this watch that, like, I forgot the whole cop storyline.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the skydiving and the bank robberies and the surfing, and that's what I remembered from this movie. And it was because it was brought up in our Fast and the Furious episode a couple weeks ago, talking about how this is just like Fast and the Furious. I know I was watching it with that lens on my eyes this time, and one of the things that infuriated me was there's so much more cop story in this than Fast and the Furious. Get to the action, yeah. Right? So, but now you have mentioned on the show before that you have never seen Point Break.
Yeah, no, I've never watched it. Point Break has always been a movie that I've really wanted to watch, but just never found the time. And, it, like, I think the only thing I know of Point Break is that the shooting the gun in the sky scene from Hot Fuzz. Like, yeah. that's my reference point for Point Break.
I forgot about that. Okay.
And so it was really interesting for me when we did the Fast and the Furious episode to read all those reviews. Like, literally, I would say 80% of the reviews for Fast and the Furious comment on how it is a ripoff of Point Break.
Yeah.
And because Fast and the Furious is, like, definitely in my top five favorite movies, I couldn't help, like you said, but watch this movie with that lens to really just compare and see, like, oh yeah, what did Fast and the Furious rip off this movie? And I would say in ways, but I still think, I mean, I would sum it up this way. I think that Fast and the Furious is a better Point Break than Point Break, in my opinion.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, this is one of those ones that if they wanted to take it to court, they wouldn't be able to take this to actual court. They'd have to take this in front of Judge Judy. That might be the only way they'd win that court case. It's close. I can see it. But, you know, Hot Tub Time Machine, you could say, ripped off Bill and Ted's. You know?
Like... Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely like there's similar themes, but I think the stories are still kind of fundamentally a little more far apart than I would say a ripoff should be, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, let's jump into Point Break. It's directed by Kathryn Bigelow, the Oscar-winning director of The Hurt Locker.
Yeah, that was shocking to me.
And our first female director on the show, Colin.
Oh, wow.
We have our first female. Yeah.
That was, like, probably the thing that blew me away right off the hop was seeing directed by Kathryn Bigelow, and I had to Google it. I was like, oh, there must be two Kathryn Bigelows. Like, surely it's not the same Kathryn Bigelow that directed the Oscar award winning movie, The Hurt Locker, because that movie is like high art compared to Point Break.
And she did Zero Dark Thirty too, didn't she?
Oh yeah, I think she might have, yeah. But it's funny because I was just like, well, it just goes to show, like, maybe Michael Bay could win an Oscar one day.
Oh, no! No! So we've got this movie produced by Peter Abrams, Joseph Newton Cohen, and Robert L. Levy, and it's written by W. Peter Iliff, and also Rick King gets a story by, even though he's not listed on IMDb for some reason, but the credits listed him, so I added him. Okay, now, we're on episode 48 now, and Colin and I decide, it's time to shake things up. Let's try to establish a new format on the show. So any regular listeners, this episode may sound a little bit different. Any new time listeners, you know, we are trying something new, and this might be what it sounds like from now on. So, you know, you can give us feedback, but we are going to be trying something different with our show just so that, you know, I'm talking a little bit less because I talk so much. And we want this to be a little bit more of a teamwork exercise going on. So bear with us if this is a little rocky for our first time.
They'll never know because we'll just edit out all the rocky
there
parts.
We go. So I do want to start off by saying how much I enjoyed the opening bit here, with the splicing between the surfing and the shooting range, and the title going across the screen and crossing over with itself was, I thought it was kind of a fun setup.
Yeah, I was going to say that was the first part where I was like, oh, this Fast and the Furious might have ripped off this piece. Because I'm pretty sure Fast and the Furious starts the exact same way with the translucent letters that like overshoot the scenery in the back. When they're loading up the trucks.
I'm trying to remember. Maybe? I don't remember. And it was like 2 weeks
ago. I did think that the shooting range thing, like, that scene when Keanu Reeves just single cocks the shotgun or whatever,
yeah,
seemed very gratuitous. And then later on in the movie, I realized that this scene is only in the movie for the chase scene later when this scene only serves one purpose, and that's to show you that he's a perfect shot and can never miss.
Yeah, it's kind of like when Riggs did his thing in Lethal Weapon, and we said that, yeah, he could hit that helicopter.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the first several scenes of this movie are just establishing our FBI world. So we meet our three main agents. We've got Ben Harp, played by John C. McGinley. Man, I loved him as Dr. Cox in Scrubs. I don't know if you were a Scrubs watcher, but oh.
I was a sporadic Scrubs watcher, and it was like, I saw him, and I was like, I know that guy.
Yeah.
What do I know that guy from? And it took me forever to realize it was Scrubs. I was ashamed.
Yeah, and I love him in Office Space as well. Oh, my God.
All right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What would you say you actually do here? Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
What is his actual position in the FBI, though? Is he, like, a captain or something? Like, it never seems clear to me.
I don't understand. Like, to be honest, I don't understand the FBI.
Like this iteration of the FBI or just in general, the FBI?
I mean, it's kind of hard because my knowledge of the FBI is solely based on movies.
Fair
enough. And all you ever see is agents. I never have really understood what the reporting structure of the FBI is.
Mm-mm. Well, there's always a director.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But the director seems like way higher than what John C. McGinley is.
Yeah, they've got the office, and I don't think he has an office.
Yeah, he seems more like, I would say he's probably like a captain.
Yeah.
Or something like that, yeah.
I know he's definitely got some of my favorite lines in the movie, though. Like, when he's talking to Johnny Utah about how little he knows, and he says, if you even knew that you knew nothing, that'd be something, but you don't. And of course, you know, we've got Young, Dumb, and Full of Cum came from him.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the, like, the origin of that line?
I was wondering that, too, because I asked the same thing back in Roadhouse about, I gotta go drain the main vein.
Yeah.
So, are these Patrick Swayze movies just, like, ingrained in our culture that much, and I never realized it?
I don't know, I do think that Patrick, like, I don't have a soft spot for Patrick Swayze, necessarily, well, I do now, but I definitely think he was more popular in his time than I ever recognized.
Yeah, I think so. I probably feel the same way. I found a fun fact, you know, at this moment when we're talking about lines, there are 105 uses of the word fuck in this movie.
No. was that at any point the record?
I have no idea. No, I thought it was a fun fact to read. And so with these FBI guys, we also have Pappas, played by Gary Busey, who we talked about in Lethal Weapon, and our hero for the movie, Johnny Utah, played by Keanu Reeves, who we talked about in Bill and Ted's. I read that Matthew Broderick was offered the role, and Johnny Depp, Charlie Sheen, Willem Dafoe, and Val Kilmer were all considered.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what I read. I read something because this movie, it was Matthew Broderick the original actor, and that there was a point where the movie was about to get made, and then things fell through for 4 years.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. I just heard that he was offered the role.
Okay.
I feel like that's a higher status than considered for.
Yeah. I can't imagine Matthew Broderick. I feel like this, if he was in this movie, that would have changed the course of his career.
Yeah, and even in 91, wasn't Willem Dafoe a little too old for the role?
91.
I don't know. Like, Willem Dafoe always seems like he's always old to me.
Yeah.
Even when he's young, you know? Yeah.
I also just feel like Willem Dafoe has the face. He doesn't have, like, I still think Johnny is a pretty boy character.
Yeah.
Like, Willem Dafoe as much as I love him, he is not what I would call a pretty boy. No. I don't know if he ever has been.
I think you have to go back to the Deer Hunter to see how young and attractive he would look.
Yeah. I could have totally seen Johnny Depp.
Like, maybe Charlie Sheen. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Charlie Sheen, yeah.
Even Val Kilmer. I mean, that would have been Willow, Val Kilmer-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Top Gun's like 86, Top Gun. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not that far away.
Okay, so what did you think of the various relationship among these Grand Theft agents? I mean...
I just think, like, they have, like, what's McGinley's character's name again?
Jeez, Ben Harp.
Ben Harp. Yeah. He is just, like, your caricature of law enforcement, for one. And then I thought, like, Angelo doesn't seem that checked out. Like, he only seems like, maybe the speech that Johnny gives him actually does, like, reignite his fire for law enforcement. But it is strange that, like, when you first meet him, like, Harp basically says, like, he should just go as well. Like, he just seems like they're at the pool or whatever, and he doesn't want to do anything. He's kind of, he reminds me of, like, I don't know, we work for government. There's always these people who've been there for way too long and are just kind of, like, hanging on.
I mean, it's even kind of like Harvey in Gotham.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah, he starts off not liking anything, but by the end of it, he's been won over by the young hotshot that comes in.
Yeah, you know? And that's kind of the thing about those relationships, is they're just so basic. Mm-hmm. Harp is the hard-ass boss. Johnny is the hotshot young guy who's out to prove himself, but like he says, he doesn't know what he doesn't know, but he thinks he knows everything. And then Pappas is that jaded, nobody listens to me, I'm just gonna keep my head down and wait till I retire type officer. And I think, I don't know, Harp kind of, like, he comes in and out so much during the movie, but I really enjoyed
the bromance.
I really enjoyed the bromance between Pappas and Utah.
Yeah. And it's an unlikely one, but man, like, I enjoy it once it does start up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why does Johnny come in so cocky, though? Like, I know he's a hotshot in his class, but, like, my God, he comes in just guns a-blazing on both the boss. Like, I mean, he's doing his stuff like, you know, the, I caught my first tube this morning, sir. Right? Like, you know, he comes in, he doesn't care if he's coming in late, you know, but then there's also, like you said, the part where he gets up in Pappas's face and yells at him for a bit. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I bought it.
Yeah. I find Johnny very, very difficult to, like, and I don't know if it's like Keanu Reeves. I mean, he's definitely, like, this is not, like, just my assessment of Keanu Reeves in this movie is I'm shocked that he ever worked after it. Like, it's just like, it's such a bad performance, but everyone around him is so good that it, like, that it just makes it okay. But even the scene where he's, like, yelling at Pappas and all, it's so wooden and so, like, I feel like Gary Busey, how he didn't just start laughing. I feel like there's probably a blooper reel for that scene for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I like their relationship. I mean, that is another difference from this movie and Fast and the Furious. Like you said, there is more of the cop stuff in this movie than that movie. I was shocked that Pappas got killed.
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted by that. I thought for sure that Pappas, we were either going to find out by the end that he was in on it with the surfers, that he was somehow, like, bankrolling them or, like, or tipping them off.
Yeah.
Or something. I thought there was going to be something like that at play.
Mm-hmm. But he and Johnny become, like, besties all of a sudden. And yeah, he just spills it all out that this is his theory that they might be surfers, because, like he says, they vanish like a virgin on prom night. He's got some great lines too. The air got dirty and the sex got clean, when he refers to LA, or you look like hammered shit, he says later on after Johnny gets beat up. But I do like that they gave, because all I know about Gary Busey is his craziness. Like, I do like his character in this. He's a very enjoyable character, you know, and they've got this bromance, like the DNA gathering on the beach is fun, or or like they give him these amazing cover stories and he sells it so well because like after after Johnny has just fought off all those guys, he runs up with the binoculars and you know, you see a kid run by with a radio or later with the dog where he's running the down dog, the they make him pretty competent, which is nice for Gary Busey, you know?
Yeah, like his arc is actually like kind of cool because it is him kind of, you know, going from that jaded officer to somebody who's kind of like found new life in their career.
Yeah.
I guess, even though he's older or whatever.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. He's not just the constant naysayer.
Yeah, he gets on board. It's like, yeah, he's rekindled this fire inside him. And now he's like all of a sudden insubordinate too, because like when Johnny gets arrested and he comes to Johnny's rescue and punches out Ben, you know, like
respect your elders.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I was wondering about Ben's status in the task force earlier, is because of the fact that he punches him out and there seem to be no repercussions.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is too bad that they killed him off. Like, you know, you kind of thought that maybe they were just going to wound him. But like the body count gets high at the end of this movie. Like, it goes from these respectful robbers that never kill anyone to all of a sudden we've got like a dozen deaths in the last half of this movie. So
that's just what happens when you cross the line.
Yeah, so now let's get into like our next group of people where we're learning how to surf and we're meeting our surfer culture. I read that it was originally going to be skateboarders, though, instead of surfers.
That would have been, I mean, I guess that, like, especially, I feel like in the 90s, like, skateboarding was really huge in California as well, but
isn't Gleaming the Cube a skateboarding movie?
There's like the dog, like
Dogtown, Dogtown
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, so the surfing thing was a weird thing for me because, I mean, I know nothing about surfing for one, but it almost feels like the surfing is shoehorned into the movie a little bit too much. It would have been one thing if they were just surfers, but I feel like they try to use surfing as a metaphor so often and like,
as a metaphor.
Yeah. Like,
is it because Patrick Swayze is so philosophical about it all? Is that why you feel that way, maybe?
Yeah, there's that. But even, like, it's like, why is surfing so important? Like, they treat it like, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's just surfing is, like, it's so important to them. It's not just something they do. It's, like, literally their culture. It's, like, their reason for being. Even their whole thing with the bank robber, like the money is used to surf.
Yeah.
I just thought that was odd that so much of it just centers on surfing, not like, but I mean, I was trying to think because I feel like in Fast and the Furious, they like steal to like take care of themselves. But the more I think about it, maybe that's not true because there is that scene in the movie where they just like buy all those car parts.
Yeah.
So it is kind of similar, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the surfers. First, let's meet our love interest for the movie, Tyler, played by Lori Petty, who was in A League of Her Own, Orange is the New Black. Do you think there's something Ellen DeGeneres-like about Lori Petty? Is it just me? But
yeah, I could see that. I thought she was so attractive. I don't know why. Like, I didn't expect to, but I thought she was just so beautiful.
Yeah.
And this is the woman who was going to be in Demolition Man.
Oh, is it? Oh, right. Yeah.
She was up for the Sandra Bullock role and then got cut due to creative differences with Sly.
Yeah.
But
both got to work with Keanu.
There you go. there is a weird moment in this movie when Johnny runs her plate and finds out that she was born, I think, in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do the math and be like, man, someone who was born in 1974 was 27 in 1991.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like anybody born in 1974 just seems so old to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is now, yeah. Do you think that this relationship between them was like a believable, though? Do you think that Keanu and Lori Petty had chemistry? I mean, because it's one of those typical, I hate you when I meet you, but I fall hard and fast for you, you know?
Well, I mean,
she comes in hot when they first meet and she saves his life. She comes in hot.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like she did her best, but when you're trying to emote with a brick, it's pretty hard. Yeah, I don't know. I thought their relationship was kind of, it's just like one of those things. It's a 90s movie, so there needs to be a love interest. And so they had one kind of thing. I think that's all I could really say for it. I didn't think it was necessarily not believable, but I thought they didn't do a good job of, like, painting the stakes of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, by the time you get to the end and she, like, almost shoots him in the head, which, I mean, yeah, like...
Good morning.
When I saw that scene, I was probably like, that's probably the worst way I could possibly be woken up by somebody to shoot the pillow next to my head. Yeah. But
yeah, that's pretty high on my list.
It's also like they don't really they kind of like mention that she dated Bodhi,
mm-hmm.
and I thought there was going to be more to that, but it's just that whole thing fizzles out really quick.
Yeah.
And so you're just like kind of like, oh yeah, well they're gonna get together, but he never really has to like fight for her
mm-hmm.
or anything. Like,
wait, which also makes it bizarre when he's got such a ticking clock on her kidnapping, and it's like, mm-hmm. well, don't you care about her? Like, it seems like you have some sort of feelings for her.
Yeah, and also they try to like show his feelings for her, but it's like it's too late.
Yeah,
and it's so fast. It's like they're having that one conversation. He's like, oh. Can't tell you right now, and then later on he's later on she finds his badge, almost shoots him in the head, and then he's calling her, he's like, oh, why can't I just say how I feel? And you're like, I don't know, Keanu, I don't know.
And we definitely get treated to like quite an extended changing scene when she's introduced, like,
yeah,
like, with him watching her with binoculars, but she just hops into that front seat without even doing up her fly. I don't think she's wearing underwear. Like, it's
yeah.
She just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, I also had questions about why he was interested in her from the get-go.
Yeah,
I didn't understand what led him to her.
Because they had a meet cute. Like, he already had an in with, remember me? I'm the idiot on the surfboard whose life you saved.
Yeah.
That's what I think about it, right? It's like he goes back to the station and says, I made a contact today. And it's just this random chick. But, you know, it's the only person he actually talked to, I guess. Yeah.
I guess I kind of assumed that when he... I mean, we know he's not a good surfer.
Yeah.
But for some reason in my mind connected a dot that I'm now that I think about it isn't there. But I thought when he went out for that initial surf that the whole like almost dying thing was almost a ploy to get her to come to him. But maybe that's not true. Maybe I'm just making that up in my head.
Yeah, it looked like he was genuinely in trouble. And then she does start teaching him to surf. I love how there's this song called I Will Not Fall playing during the learning to surf montage. It's like, okay, yeah, that's a little on the nose, I think.
Yeah. It also seems like a real violation of whatever privacy act that exists in the United States to be an officer of the law, take somebody's license plate number to find out where they work. To ask them on a date.
So that you can make up a story about your fake dead parents. How would she even forgive him for that later? Like, even with the fact that he saves her life, I don't think that's forgivable. That's mm-hmm. hitting below the belt on that one.
The fact that she does, I feel like that's a little bit of toxic masculinity happening there. Like, he basically just gaslit you for 2.5 hours and then you... Oh, it's all right. He saved me, even though he lied about everything and... had sex with me, and it's all right. All's well that ends well.
I did read that everyone, or the three main people, did learn how to surf before this movie. Like, they went and had professional coaching. And Patrick Swayze had said that he had tried a couple times before. Keanu Reeves had never tried. And Lori Petty had never even been in the ocean.
Yeah, I read that as well.
I love that.
And I mean, I've never tried surfing, but everything that I've seen or heard from people who have is like, it's not an easy thing to learn.
No, I have trouble bodyboarding anytime I go to Mexico or something, and that's the easy one.
Yeah.
You just have to lay there. Yeah, and I do have to say that this movie was made now, and I don't think I've ever actually seen the reboot. I don't know if you have.
I haven't. I was tempted to watch it, but I read the Wikipedia synopsis of it and a couple of reviews, and it just sounded so terrible.
Oh, okay.
That I just thought, like, nah, I'm not going to waste my time.
Even with the Hemsworth at the helm, huh?
Well, I don't think it's a Hemsworth.
I thought Chris Hemsworth was the star of that one.
No, literally the only actress that I recognize is Teresa Palmer, who I always call, like, blonde Kristen Stewart. And, like, she's the most famous person in that movie of the main characters.
Well, that shows that I've definitely never seen it then. Point Break, Edgar Ramirez and Luke Bracey?
Yeah.
Okay. There. That's who they are. And that's Bodhi and Utah, respectively. Okay, well. But yeah, I think, if you made this movie today, though, I mean, a quick Google search. Like, what is he telling her when he, like, after he fucks her on the beach? And, I mean, man, she'd be so salty.
Yeah.
But, like, he wakes up the next morning and realizes he's late for work. What's he telling her? But yeah, a quick Google search, because apparently he's famous from his college days. You know, his cover story would be completely thrown.
Yeah, immediately. The lawyer thing. I thought it was interesting, and because what does he say? Like, when they're playing football and Bodhi asks him, like, what he did after college, he just says, I went to law school. And then there's this, like, weird pause where Bodhi fills in the gap of, like, you're a lawyer. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that goes back to the whole thing. Like, oh, if they ask you if you're a cop, you have to tell them or whatever. But
yeah, the entrapment, quote unquote, rule. Yeah.
But yeah. In an age of the internet, she would just be able to search his name and be like, oh, what law firm do you work for?
Yeah.
There's no way that wouldn't come up.
Exactly. Well, now, while we're on the subject of Bodhi, yeah, let's talk about him. Patrick Swayze. We talked about him in our Roadhouse episode. Do you like Swayze with the beard?
Oh, I'm so glad that you brought this up. No, I do not.
Like, in a way, I thought it was like reminiscent of Arnold's in Kindergarten Cop, where I wasn't sure whether it was real. Like, it's a little less fake looking, but still, it's off.
I was gonna say, like, even Patrick Stewart. Even Patrick Swayze with blonde hair is so foreign to me. Like, that dirty blonde hair. I was just like, where is the Patrick Swayze from Roadhouse? And
yeah, that more of a sandy blonde. Sandy blonde, not bleach blonde.
Yeah, I'm just so used to seeing him look so clean. Mm-hmm. And in Point Break, he just looks so homeless.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that might be just commitment to his work. But yeah, the beard was a struggle the first watch, for sure.
So, you know the joke that he throws out about Johnny's surfboard, saying, well, it's a surfboard, all right. And then he compares it to a 57 Chevy, saying that he once used to drive one of those. That's the wink and the thumbs up to the camera here, because that's the car he drives in Dirty Dancing. So, you know, another clean-cut Swayze driving his 57 Chevy. Nice. But he really likes these philosophical characters, though, right?
Yeah, he does. And it's just like, Bodhi didn't have to be so philosophical. Like, he could have just been a little bit more, I don't know.
But he's also, like, so divided, because, like, not only is he all riding waves as a state of mind, man, but he's also the 100% pure adrenaline guys, you know. Other guys snort for it, jab a vein for it, all you gotta do is jump. Right? Like, you know, he's got the adrenaline junkie, and he's got the deep philosophical, the waves, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Just the live free. I'm surprised he doesn't just live in a tent.
Yeah, why does he actually have a house? But if he's always moving, why does he have a house? He must be renting that house.
He must be renting it, yeah.
And his obsession with the 50-year storm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, like you said earlier, where it's just like, this is just their culture.
Yeah.
I wish I could understand a culture that deeply for something.
Yeah, I mean, it's very reminiscent of today with, like, fitness culture. How, like, when you see, like, fitness influencers on Instagram or whatever, they're just so into it and everything is about it. And it's, that's kind of what these guys were, like, surf influencers before they could just take pictures of themselves all the time.
Yeah. I enjoyed the bromance, though, between Johnny Utah and Bodhi. The Pappas Johnny one, I don't know, which one do you think was better?
This is one where I was very much comparing Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, I agree.
So I was very much comparing Brian and Dom to Johnny and Bodhi. And mm-hmm. so, what did you think, like, in terms of Bodhi and Johnny?
Well, part of it seemed to be that Bodhi was, like, fanboying out on Johnny. Because when you look at the fact that in Fast and the Furious, he saves Dom's life.
Mm-hmm.
That's how Brian gets welcomed into the family. The whole scene.
The Buster.
Yeah, kept me out of jail. But yeah, I felt like compared to Fast and the Furious, because again, I was watching it with that lens too. It seems like he was welcoming him in because he is the one that turns around later. You know, oh, don't talk to him like that. You know who this is? This is Johnny Utah. So it seemed more accelerated, but I think it was because of the different reason.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
There was something about it that to me, I couldn't gather what they wanted from each other or if mm-hmm. if Johnny was even genuinely friends with him.
Yeah.
There are times when Johnny seems like he's getting in deep, as they say, but then when he goes to do his police stuff, like, he's all for it. Like,
well, yeah, because I also don't even feel like Johnny has these guys on his radar as suspects. I think he feels like this is getting him closer to the actual robbers. I don't think they're even actually suspects at this point.
Yeah, that was the other question I had. So if we're talking like the beginning, like the first half of the movie, I still don't really understand like Bodhi. He seems like he's being shady to me.
Uh-huh.
For whatever reason, he never seems genuine.
Yeah,
and he almost seems jealous of Johnny. Like they're just it just seems like they have this.
He's playing some sort of game. Is how it feels. Yeah, I see
that. In Fast and the Furious, they're like bros. Like they're tight. Yeah. Like they're like friends. But in Point Break, it's like they're rivals almost. They're like friendly. They're more friendly rivals than like family. I think.
Mm-hmm.
would be my distinction.
Yeah, because even when he turns it up later on with when he knows mm-hmm. and he's trying to get him to go skydiving with him, like even when he ramps it up at that point, it's like but I kind of saw that. Yeah, I agree with you. I can see that it's almost like that was part of his character traits all along.
Yeah, because so later on there's that scene, I think it's after Tyler and Johnny have sex and they're walking to the beach and they see the four of them surfing
mm-hmm.
or the five of them surfing and the one guy pulls down his pants, which is a weird way to start connecting the dots, but like,
right?
But it's like,
well, and I love at that moment when it like even flashes back because Tyler
like
says, "What's wrong, Johnny? You look like you saw a ghost." And it flashes back to when Papa says, "Oh, they're ghosts, Johnny," and it's like spoon feeding you.
So it's like this scene happens. And I don't know, in my mind, I feel like Johnny now knows these are the guys. These are the ex-presidents.
Yeah.
And so then what happens next is the whole chase after they've spooked them from the bank and Johnny chases.
Yeah, the stake.
Yeah.
The shittiest stakeout in the history of stakeouts.
Yeah.
Because one guy is reading Calvin and Hobbes and the other guy is buying his meatball sub. And of course, that's when they rob the bank.
Yeah. And so... it's weird. This whole like turn of events is so bizarre to me because like Johnny is not masked. It's not like when Brian in Fast and Furious goes and masked and like takes out Johnny Tran stuff.
Yeah.
Johnny is not masked. He's shooting at these guys. They can all see him. They all know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the assertion is that he knows who they are.
Yeah.
And so then he chases Bodhi all through like the neighborhood, and then has the shoot in the air thing.
Fucks up his knee. Yeah.
And the assumption is that he's shooting in the air because he's real, like he's in too deep. He doesn't want to kill Bodhi.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next day, when they turn up at his house and tell him, "Hey Johnny, like let's go skydive," why are they all acting like they don't know?
Mm-hmm.
Like why are they all acting like Johnny doesn't know who they are and they don't know who he is?
Well, yeah, I mean,
it makes...
there is the shot that they have where Johnny is reaching for his gun and realizes he can't reach it without arousing suspicion. So they do have that. So he's just playing along because, I don't know. Yeah, like, you're right. Like, it's flawed. Like, how can he not think that they would know? Yeah, exactly.
But even and then even he goes so far as to be like, well, who packed my parachute?
Oh, how much fun was that little shell game that they play where they're like, well, okay, fine, use mine. All I had Princess Bride vibes, the Iocane powder.
Yeah.
but then they all start like just swapping shoots all over the place.
Yeah.
follow the Red Queen.
Yeah, it just kind of didn't make any sense to me why he wouldn't be like out already trying to find them, and why when they come to his door he would be like, yeah, sure, it seems like a good idea to be one on five 30,000 feet in the air.
Yeah. Well, he tries to get out of it with his sore knee, so
yeah,
there is that. That's his half-assed attempt to not have to skydive with them.
Yeah, but yeah, like, to go back, I think I went on a tangent, but to go back, like, with the relationship of Bodhi and Johnny, I think I just didn't understand whether or not they actually liked each other or not.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed kind of up in the air.
Yeah, like, Bodhi always showed up with taking him out and just disrupting his day. But, you know, it's, I guess that's the surf culture, maybe. I don't know.
And I think that, too, like, because all I know about Point Break is that everything I've heard about it is kind of centered around, like, the Swayze-Reeves bromance.
Yeah.
And so I was a bit thrown back by it's not really the bromance I expected it to be, for sure.
So you think the one with Pappas is better then?
Yeah, I would say the Pappas one.
Yeah,
the Pappas one was more meaningful. Even when Pappas dies and Johnny's like holding him, and it's like, or even when he gets shot and Johnny like has his reaction and stuff, it hit harder when Pappas died, for sure.
Yeah, I do want to say that the party that they have, what the fuck is going on at that party with the fire breathing? And like, they never actually show drug use in this movie, but like, everyone at that party is on something.
Yeah.
That's not just drinking.
Which was shocking because the movie's 18A.
Yeah. But then what's up with the night surfing?
I don't know.
Like, and it's so clearly not night.
Yeah.
But like, so clear. Like, have you ever been in the ocean at nighttime?
No, because it's scary as fuck.
Yeah, it's just so obviously just a dim filter that they put on the camera for that one.
There are some notably cheesy ocean cuts in this movie. The one that's most like cringeworthy to me is at the end when Johnny and Bodhi are on the beach, and they're like, Johnny's doing his whole speech about how he tracked Bodhi down and from place to place.
One wave.
And then it just gives me one wave.
And then it just
gives this shot of, like, I'm pretty sure it's the most popularly used video of a giant tidal wave like curling over the ocean.
Yeah.
But it's weird. Yeah. It's just so clearly implanted.
Stock footage. Yeah. I know there is that scene where they're playing football on the beach by headlight. Okay, because that's a thing you do. And that beach is actually the same one that they played soccer on in Karate Kid. So I thought that was a fun little fact, yeah. But yeah, that was also kind of a fun scene with the whole chasing him the fuck down to tackle him into the waves. Okay, like, he tackled him into water. Why is everyone coming
in hot?
Yeah,
why are
they
so mad? You all love the water. Why are you so angry?
Yeah, they go out at night to surf on it, apparently.
Yeah. No, I did. I'm glad you brought up the football scene. I thought that scene was a lot of fun.
Okay, well, let's get to the real reason we're here, the bank heists and the high adrenaline action.
Yes.
Do you think the president shtick got old after a while? I am not a crook, and like, you know, all their impersonations, just even in the van and shit like that. In the bank, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, but
I definitely really liked it the first time I saw it. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, by the end it kind of got, by the end especially, because at the end it's much more high stakes, and I was like, I feel like in that situation you guys would just be down to business,
mm-hmm.
not still pulling this like weird act.
Yeah.
But I did think that it was like what a brilliant shtick to like use five presidents. It'd be so easy to remember their names.
Yeah.
So you're never worried about like saying somebody's name accidentally.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. I thought that was good. It's kind of like a Batman. They almost remind me of like a Batman gang.
The Joker gang in Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I did read, and I mean, we may not know this because we're Canadian, but I read that they get killed off in the order that the presidents actually held office.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I love stuff like that.
Well, and there was one more thing about that too, was Johnny, the fact that he's unmasked, the only other ex-president that was alive at the time was Gerald Ford, who is famously known as being a football player in college. And so the parallel with Johnny Utah being Gerald Ford, basically, in this case, was also just another one of those Easter eggs that I'm like, that's fucking cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So we've also got that scene where they're casing the wrong surfers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I know one of my first thoughts when I saw Johnny outside the window was the neighbor's lawnmower and just how insanely dangerous that lawnmower looked with its exposed blades. And I completely forgot that it comes up as part of the fight later.
Yeah.
But you know, Colin, that lawnmower, it was made by Craftsman, and I think that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner!
Do it.
Always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Point Break is brought to you by Craftsman, Corona Beer, Cheerios, Pepsi, Motorola, and Midland Radios, Porsche, Lincoln, Ford, Chevrolet, and Audi cars, U-Haul, Goodyear Tires, Visa and MasterCard, Davco, AeroCart, Specs and Fibian Eyewear, and Oakley, O'Neill Clothing, Hideaway Leather Company, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, and Mr. Zog Sex Wax. Plus, a shout-out to what I believe is a fictional company, Yoroko Gas Station. That's where he makes the flamethrower. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Why don't we talk about the flamethrower for a minute?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that possible?
I don't know. I'm wondering whether that's like... why it's a made-up gas station, because, like, Shell didn't want to attach their name to that. Exxon was like, no, 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 no. But, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, Zoolander would have me believe you would just blow the whole place up.
Yeah, I don't even know how high pressure, like, how much of a jet it comes out in.
Yeah. I just feel like if the gas is what you lit, I feel like the entire thing would just catch fire.
It should go back through the hose, blow up the pump. Yeah.
I also thought, why wouldn't he have just shot gas all over the car and tossed the lighter in like any normal person would? I mean, it's Bodie, so he probably was just like, ugh, flamethrower, awesome.
So much cooler. So extreme. Because, you know, we see that everything in his house, he's all about extreme. He likes rock climbing. He likes skydiving. Actually, Patrick Swayze really does like skydiving. And so one of the jumps, it is actually him.
Oh, nice.
in those shots. Yeah, not the other guys, but yeah, he,
that's awesome.
He was an adrenaline junkie.
Did you have a did you have a favorite of, like, what was your favorite, like, big set piece scene?
Well, this one with the raid on the wrong house was definitely a fun one.
Yeah.
Like, that one woman, the naked woman,
she's
scrappy as fuck, man.
Like, I was like, what happened in your day that you were so angry?
Yeah, I think ultimately, though, the one that was probably my favorite was the car chase to foot chase with Keanu Reeves hurtling over people and all that. I mean, that was a big, long one. And I remember I looked at that and pause the movie for a second, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm only halfway through.
Yeah.
Like, usually a big car chase like this, it's like, oh, we're getting right to the ending. And I'm like, what is left in this movie? And then it's like, we get like 10 minutes of skydiving for no reason, which I actually thought was just kind of pointless. We've established from the pictures in his house that he's an adrenaline junkie. You could have still had that as like the big climax of this master heist, and we would have got it without having to take Keanu Reeves for a skydive and waste some fucking time.
Yeah, the skydive was so bizarre. Like, just, yeah, like I said before, just all the circumstances around how it even comes to be is weird.
Yeah.
It literally serves no purpose. They could have, that whole skydiving scene could just be cut out, and it could have just been a scene of them abducting Johnny, taking him somewhere, showing him the video of Tyler.
He's always getting fucking kidnapped.
Yeah.
Always. Like, nonstop in the end.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, yeah, I thought the skydiving scene, like, it looked cool. And, I mean, they have, like, that whole... That was the other thing, is, like, even the... thing when they're deciding who's gonna pull the shoot or whatever. Yeah. Like, that's the only thing it's for, is foreshadowing.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Uh-huh. So, like, that's...
And then when that scene actually comes up in the end, why did you have to throw the gun away?
Yeah.
Like, he fucking tosses it. Why didn't you put it in your pants pocket?
Yeah.
Or tuck it in your waistband, I mean. You know, like,
yeah.
I just... The chicken with the parachute was like, what? Why?
Yeah.
The Mythbusters have actually busted everything about that final parachute scene.
Oh, really?
Except he would have been able to catch up to him if he was all torpedo-like. But the talking in midair, could two of them hold on to that parachute for 90 seconds? Could both of them survive if they landed with how far off the ground they pulled the chute?
Nice.
Yeah, all of it was busted except for catching up to Patrick Swayze.
That's awesome.
So...
Yeah, I would agree. I think the foot chase is my favorite, just because it's like, it reminds me a lot of the 1966 Batman movie when he's running with the bomb,
yeah,
where things just keep getting thrown in his way. Like, I laugh so hard when he gets the dog thrown at him.
did you see in the credits how carefully they made sure that you knew that it was
not
that
hurt.
It was simulated?
Oh, no, I didn't
yeah,
see that.
Yeah, and like said, SPCA was on set supervising the stunt and everything like that. Yeah, because it's a fake dog that he kicks away, obviously.
Yeah.
It seemed like a longer humane society message in the credits than normal.
Yeah,
he weaponizes a fucking dog.
Yeah, that was awesome. And then, like, the house, the first raid on the false raid or whatever on that house was, I don't know. There's one scene, I can't remember who they take down, but these FBI agents, they just come, like, full bore into the kitchen and take this guy down over the table. And, like, max credit to whatever actor played one, because if you watch it, he smokes his head on the edge of the counter, and I was shocked that he was not unconscious.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Jeez.
I did love that, I mean, we didn't mention him before, but the fact that Anthony Kiedis is in this movie, I thought was so bizarre.
Yes.
I didn't realize he had an acting career.
Okay, and so when they jump on him on the beach, Bodhi ends up saying that they were a bunch of Nazi assholes.
Yeah.
I don't think they were all white. Weren't a couple of them, like, Hispanic?
Yeah.
Or were they just really tan?
I mean, yeah, it's hard to say, but I thought for sure at least one was Hispanic.
Yeah. Okay.
Whatever it is, they do not, like, they... No one would look at those guys, I don't think, and be like, oh yeah, those are Nazis. Like, maybe if they were, like, skinheads or something like that, but they don't look like Nazis to me.
Yeah, but the one guy had, like, the braids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did read with the whole bit about the story of his knee injury was actually something that was similar to Keanu Reeves' real life, because he had a college hockey career and he fucked up his knee, and that's what got him into acting.
I did not know that.
And then it took him a while to become a really likable guy in acting, I guess.
Yeah.
A less wooden guy.
Yeah.
He loosened up in The Matrix, you know? It's
because
even Speed is a little wooden.
Yeah. Prior to doing this podcast, I think the only movies I'd seen Keanu Reeves in were The Matrix. I've yet to watch John Wick. Oh, I watched, that's not true. I watched Constantine, which, I mean,
oh yeah.
He's still pretty, like, morose in that movie.
there was one point in the one robbery scene where Johnny is being taken along. First of all, I don't understand why they changed up their MO at this point. Like, why did they go for the vault all of a sudden?
Yeah, that also didn't make...
But the security guard, I could have sworn it was Brian Baumgartner, Kevin from The Office.
Yeah, I thought that
but
too.
No, it wasn't. However, earlier when they do the wrong raid and the undercover narcotics officer comes in and he's all pissed off, I'm like, is that Tom Sizemore? And yes, he's uncredited, but there he is, Tom Sizemore.
Yeah.
The whole line about, I hate this hair. You think I like this hair? My wife hates this hair. I have to sleep in a motel.
Yeah, that was good. So with, like, the final bank robbery, the cop who ends up being there, I was just thinking the second time I watched it through is, this is what, like, the cop is living in an action movie that would never exist because it goes back. He's like, he's living in the real person's action movie. I would have loved to see an alternate movie that just focuses on this cop. And this is just this ends up being his last, like, whatever happened his day, and now he's like, I have one last chance to be a hero. And then he goes to the bank and gets his opportunity and just completely bungles it. I was trying to decide if it was his fault that things went sideways or if it was... I also kind of really feel bad for that security guard because he just didn't want any of it.
Oh, yeah.
He ends up getting killed.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, he's murdered by proximity or because he was wearing a uniform and he was now the man. So, yeah. Okay, so finale of this movie, the 1 year later. I don't think I fully understand what was happening here.
Yeah. Right?
Okay, first of all, I have jurisdiction questions. He's FBI. He's in Australia. Would they have really cooperated this much with the FBI to bring in this guy?
Well, I mean, he did kill a police officer, so maybe they'd probably have some sort of extradition rules. Yeah. I don't know. That scene, I'm just going to say it, it fell really flat.
Yeah.
All respect to Catherine Bigelow, Oscar award winning director of Hurt Locker. I don't know if she did win an Oscar. But I don't know. This movie just doesn't, it sets up all the wrong things. At the beginning, we have this like shooting scene just to foreshadow and set up the fact that he's an ace shot, so when he misses it's bad. Then we have the parachute scene to foreshadow the later parachute scene. This final scene, I feel like, has no decent setup.
Yeah.
I feel like the true end of the movie, it would have been better to just let Bodhi ride off into the sunset after the airport.
Yeah.
Because my question in the scene was, are they friends?
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal?
And is Bodhi dead now? You know, that wave, we have to assume that he is, but he also just let him go? And then throws away his badge?
Yeah.
Did he quit the FBI in this moment? Or was this a decision he already had and he used the badge to get the Australian police to put a full task force out on this guy in a cooperative effort? You know?
Yeah.
I don't think it's as straightforward as the 10-second car that Dom gets at the end.
Exactly.
Like that is, you go, this is you're risking your life by going.
Back to my, like... original point on the Point Break versus Fast and the Furious judgment is this is where Fast and the Furious does a better Point Break than Point Break.
Yeah.
Because that moment that Brian, I mean, I've seen it so many times now that I know it's going to happen. But in the original movie, that moment when Brian hands Dom the keys really means something.
Yeah.
This scene where Johnny unlocks the handcuffs, it doesn't really mean anything because he's still either going to die or like, but again, then it just goes back to this overarching surfing is God thing of this movie. Like it was worth the wave.
Yeah. I'm being returned to the ocean where I want to be or whatever.
Yeah. Ultimately the movie, the moral of the movie is just like whatever you have to do to get the next wave.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
And no consequences apparently. I mean, I guess, you know, it's your own damn fault for wanting to go out in a wave that big, but that you might die. But
yeah,
I mean, I look at this and with the comparison to the Fast and the Furious, I can see how a sequel could have come off this is, you know, he throws away his badge. They could have been partners. You could have had Point Break 9.
Well, it's funny. Know, like... It's funny, too, because I was thinking after if they had kept Bodhi alive. And I mean, Patrick Swayze is obviously not alive anymore.
Yeah,
but like.
Yeah.
But one of the most amazing crossovers you could have ever made would have been Point Break with Fast and the Furious.
Oh my god, yes.
Because these guys, like that team, the ex-presidents, are basically what the Fast and the Furious is now. These like thrill-seeking, like government agents.
You could have went
down like kind of the same path, but I think having Bodhi die was a big mistake.
Yeah. Any other scenes, or should we just wrap this up and get to our reviews?
We brushed on it, like the scene, the first scene where Johnny yells at Pappas again, I just need to mention, I thought that was like, I didn't know if it was supposed to be funny or not. And then you go back, and you do see, I will say this for Keanu, you do see growth between that scene and the final scene when he's doing his little walk around Bodhi, explaining to him, like, how long he's looked for him, and how, you gotta come in, Bodhi, man. this is the way it ends. You gotta go down.
Now, because his hair was long in the final scene, I'm wondering whether that was filmed first.
Yeah.
And then he lost the character somewhere along the way, because then he got the haircut and lost the character. The character was in the hair, man.
Yeah. I just love, my favorite part of that last scene is when he's like, people trusted you and they died. You're just like, okay.
All the passion.
But then Patrick, I still keep wanting to call him Patrick Stewart. Patrick Swayze.
I got that stuck in our heads.
Patrick Swayze, honestly, man, this guy is brilliant. Was brilliant. Like, he just plays it so cool. Everything he does, he just plays it so cool.
Yeah.
I just want to watch more Swayze, is I guess the ultimate point that I have to make.
Have you ever been skydiving?
No, that's, no? I honestly don't think I can. I think I'd have a heart attack. It just seems, I've been cliff jumping. I like,
okay.
And I like that, but I don't know, skydiving, I just think it's too high. It's too much.
Yeah.
Have you been?
I have been, yeah. And what a rush. But like the Mythbusters apparently busted, there's no way you'd be able to have a conversation.
No.
my tandem, operator was right in my ear, and I could barely hear what he was saying, even once the chute was pulled. So
yeah, I always wonder, like, because I mean, I've seen like videos, obviously, of people skydiving.
Yeah.
And it's just so weird to me how you have to be falling fast, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, you're falling very, very fast. You've reached terminal velocity, but it looks so slow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always boggled my mind about skydiving. And just, yeah.
But I think they were pretty good, like, if we bring it back to this movie, they were pretty good about showing the intensity of, especially when they're having the whole standoff with pulling the ripcord, but mm-hmm. showing you the intensity that he comes down and fucks his knee again. Yeah. Oh man, I felt bad for him. Like, every time he landed on that knee, it's just like, oh.
Well, that was the one Keanu. Thing, because like, I always hear about like paratroopers in the army, how they have such messed up knees.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking that was probably going to come into play with the skydiving somehow.
Yeah.
That's why in the first one, when they land on the water, I was like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, there we go. That's Point Break. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored a 7.3 out of 10, has a Metascore of 58. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 70% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 79%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a dangerously exposed lawnmower to the face. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, I got a few from Rotten Tomatoes, and then I got one gem from the Google Play Store, so I'll start with the Rotten Tomatoes ones.
Outstanding.
Super reviewer Alec B. says, 3.5 out of 5 stars. Johnny Utah might be the most wildly incompetent FBI agent in the history of cinema, but that's part of what makes Point Break enjoyable. Yeah, the script is all over the place. That's probably being generous. And yet, Bigelow makes it work somehow. As to the much-discussed homoeroticism, well, I can't claim to know if it was intentional or not, but it's certainly there.
I don't know if I felt that myself. I mean, you know, bromance is the word that I use, but I don't know if it's homoeroticism.
It's hard to say.
Is it only because they're shirtless so much? But they wear wetsuits. I mean, they're not even, I don't know, just the, is it the mooning?
I mean, I feel like they're more in love with the water than anything.
Yeah. And Johnny's in love with the girl, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lakeisha S., 3.5 out of 5 stars, says, a surprising degree of depth to this often smart thrill ride. Swayze is legitimately magnetic in this role, and he's able to keep you invested even though a large stretch of the film has the audience waiting for Reeves' character to find out the obvious. The chasing Reagan scene is one of the best chase sequences out there, and the skydiving moments are iconic.
Yep. Well, I mean, I already mentioned how I thought the skydiving was overused, but that chase scene, that is a good one. Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I'm glad I saw that one again.
Paul W., 3.5 out of 5 stars, says, not quite as good as you remember. It's a mixed bag. Some vital action sequences, including a pounding foot chase and botched violent house arrest. Swayze and Busey are also very watchable, but the plot is silly and parts of the script seem to have been written by a 12-year-old. Signs of James Cameron involvement. Bigelow would go on to make better films. If you ever want to know why people say that Keanu Reeves is a bad actor, watch the last 5 minutes of this movie.
the 5 minutes you actually praised him for.
I know. We have a different. I would say watch the first, like, 20 minutes of this movie and you'll see some just absolute... Or just, like go back and watch that whole scene around, like, him and Tyler just before this. It's like, that's some of the worst emoting I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, and I like the subtle sick burn on James Cameron in there, too.
Yeah. George M., 2 out of 5 stars, says, minus the stunts, I hated this movie, and frankly, I don't like any of this director's movies. I'm sorry, not sorry. She's talented, I just can't. 2 bags, 2 hours, I'll never get back. RT gets it wrong again. This sucks. People just like Swayze and Keanu, so do I, but bad is bad, and that's it. This movie came out the week after T2 Judgment Day, and couldn't take number one from Arnie. T2 is maybe my favorite movie ever. Just like the white trash grandma played by Glenn Close in Hillbilly Elegy or Redneck Fable, that Netflix bomb about 30 movies ago, that was her favorite movie, but the reference to a great movie and a bad movie doesn't make two wrongs make a right. That's just an aside. So yeah, whatever with Point Break. More like Give Me a Break.
What's going on?
This thing is cheesy, and they had the nerve to try to make John C. McGinley unlikable and Gary Busey likable. It's the opposite. Fuck this. That is the best. So yeah, whatever with Point Break. More like Give Me a Break. I love that.
Oh, boy.
Amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think John C. McGinley is always supposed to be someone that you love to hate anyway.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Dr. Cox is not a nice person, but he's got a nice heart.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. We didn't see him enough in this movie to really give a shit about him that much.
Mm-hmm.
He delivered Dr. Cox-like lines in a Dr. Cox-like way. I mean,
for sure.
It worked for me.
All right. Sonny J, 2 out of 5 stars, says, 2 hours of macho posturing, along with a brain-dead plot, awful dialogue, and more wooden acting than a forest full of wood. The only highlight was the spectacular camera work, especially the surfing and skydiving scenes. That said, far too long was spent showing guys surfing the wave to the point where I wondered whether I was watching a film documentary about surfing.
Okay.
All right, and then this is the last one from Google Play Reviews, from Colin Pittman. Great name. 5 out of 5 stars. Spoiler alert. Holy wow balls. This is one good movie, my man. I would highly suggest it. It is great for the whole family who loves a romantic action in the water. Keanu Reeves is a beast in this movie, especially when he jumps over the fence and almost breaks his ankles, but continues to try to chase the surfers and then empties his clip straight into the sky. What a badass move. What if those came falling back down right at him? That could kill him, but he's such a beast that he doesn't care. Well, I'm at my 100 words, so I'll stop. You should watch it.
Great fun for the whole family. Didn't you point out that it's 18A?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you want to say, I don't know if the family wants to watch a naked woman stab somebody in the back with a knife. Yeah. Repeatedly.
Yeah. Right on. So we've got mostly in the 70s, except for the Metascore of 58. Colin, final thoughts on the movie. What did you think? Where does it fall for you?
It's a movie that I'm glad to have watched. In retrospect, I think it's unfortunate that we watched Fast and the Furious, or that I specifically watched Fast and the Furious for probably the 30th time again before I watched this movie.
And so recently, yeah.
And had read all those people like talk about how, like, comparing Point Break to Fast and the Furious. I think that might have tainted my view on it a little bit.
It really does, yeah.
But at the end of the day, I love Patrick Swayze, even with his, like, weird, dirty beard in this movie. He's just so good at everything. I feel like I didn't appreciate him enough previous to doing this podcast.
Yeah, there are situations in his life where it definitely, he kind of became a punchline at some point, but
yeah.
You're right. I agree that everything that we've seen of him recently, because, I mean, he had Ghost, and he had Dirty Dancing, and even though those, you know, were good performances, they're not macho movies that, mm-hmm. When we have a macho movie like Point Break or Roadhouse or, you know, Red Dawn or something like that, it's tough to see him in that light without thinking of that punchline that he kind of became. And I see what you mean about him, where it's like, yeah, he was better than I thought.
Yeah. The thing that I really respect about him is he just is like 100% charisma.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's just so different from, you know, other macho guys of that era. Like, he's not the, like, butch beefcake guy that I feel like. He's not Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone. Like, he's still obviously in good shape, but he's like, he just has like such charisma without having to be such a, like, that archetype, I guess.
Well, I almost would say that that's his sensitive side, the fact that he's a dancer. And that's why the women are all in love with the Swayze, you know, it's because he taps into that.
Yeah, I would give Point Break, I would probably fall in the 70%. I think it's an enjoyable movie. I could have done with about half of the skydiving, but the chase scenes were really awesome. And like all the like big action set pieces, I thought really, really delivered well.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fan of a heist movie, so I definitely like seeing the heist aspect, and I wanted a bit more of that. I mean, that was where, like I said at the beginning, I didn't really remember all the cop stuff. It was all the heist stuff and all the action, and that's what I remember from this movie, and that's what I still enjoyed, and I could have almost done without the first 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, you knock off 5 or 10 minutes off the beginning, cut out that one skydiving scene. All of a sudden, it's clipping along at like an hour 45 instead of like the 205, 210 that it was. Mm-hmm. And there you go. I mean, that's one of the things that I would do to speed this up. But I get into that 70 range as well, though, because, I feel the same way. I would rather watch Fast and the Furious.
Yeah,
I will say that. But it was definitely nice to revisit this. And being so close to Roadhouse, it's fun to see these action Patrick Swayze movies. Because the ones I'm most familiar with are, strangely enough, Dirty Dancing and Ghost. Mm-hmm. That's the Patrick Swayze that I know the best.
Yeah, I think before we did the podcast, the only one that I had watched was Dirty Dancing. That was all I'd seen him in.
Yeah.
And then, Roadhouse was so good. So good. Just phenomenal movie. You know what? Point Break could have used a little bit more Sam Elliott.
Oh, it could have used a lot more Sam Elliott. Yeah.
Like, what if Sam Elliott had played Harp?
Oh,
I mean, there's no way he would have took a punch to the face, but...
Yeah, I don't know if I like him being the foil. I mean, I don't know. I almost want him replacing Keanu.
Oh, yeah.
Except he's so much older than Patrick Swayze.
I mean, what if you made Swayze Utah and you made Sam Elliott Bodie?
There you go. That's the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
And that is Point Break, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, if you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is tell your friends. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast trying to get noticed in that huge sea of podcasts out there. We are the official rival of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, so we need your help getting us our numbers to help crush Conan O'Brien's podcast. And it's telling your friends is what's going to do it. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say in those reviews, but it's those 5 stars. They drive you up the charts and they help us get noticed.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iustolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go on there, give us a share, give us a like, give us a comment, tell us to hang 10, whatever that means. Check out Sean's sweet memes. I'm sure there'll be some awesome ones for Point Break. I don't understand how there could not be.
Yeah.
And also, if you'd like to get a hold of us by email, be sure to write us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Just drop us a line. Let us know if you like the show. Let us know if you like our new format. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show and donate to us, you can go to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone, become part of our Patreon community, and get a shout out on our show, just like executive producer Joshua Blum. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.